Hello?
I'm here.
Did you have to go in the other room to find IMDb?
Yeah, I have him. He's right here. Maxwell, IMDb.
What's up? You guys want to know about a movie? I can tell you about a movie.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. You are Keith Foster from San Diego, California.
You are Cassidy Robinson from Los Angeles, California.
Representing SoCal.
What?
People who listened to our 200th episode last week, did a little Q&A. We talked about where we're from, how we all met, and blah, blah, blah. So people should know by now, if they listen at all, that we are not from California. We are from the Intermountain West of Idaho.
Shh, you're giving away all our secrets.
What is the most California thing about you at this point? If you've adopted things. I had a conversation about this a little while ago, and they said it was, I don't know, it might have been avocado on everything and LaCroix soda.
Yeah, no, that's not me. I don't know what the most Californian thing about me is, but I do know the moment I knew I was a Californian. Does that work?
Okay.
So the moment I knew I was a Californian was when I flipped off a bus, for having its own lane. I was stuck in traffic and I was just like, fuck you, bus! You think you're so fucking special?
You know what? I think that's not only a Californian thing. I think that's very specifically a San Diego thing, because I don't think we have just bus lanes here.
We don't have a lot. It's only in... it might have just been like the carpool lane that the bus got to use, because...
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, or whatever. All I know is a bus passed me because they were fucking special, and I was stuck on the 805, or as I used to refer to it, the 80 fuck! I had to take that to the fuckty too.
Very, very specifically San Diegan issues here. Yes. I don't even know if I have an answer to that question I just asked you. I guess it's probably traffic related. Is when you get to know the city and you know like the byways, and you can do one of those like Californian rants like in Saturday Night Live, where you can actually give like those kind of... I remember actually like thinking it was just a funny sketch because they're just talking about random directions.
Yeah, because I take the 805, which turns into the 5, to get to L.A., or I could connect going east by taking the 52 or the 56 to connect to 15.
Sure.
But you don't want to do that.
But I knew that it wasn't like, I knew that it wasn't just totally a joke when I watched it again later, like the first Californian sketch. And I could like recognize the exact directions he was giving. It's like, oh, he's actually taking him pretty close to where I live.
They probably map like would Google Maps it and get the directions to make it more accurate.
Yeah,
I don't know that that's true.
But I don't skateboard. I think that's one of those things. Everyone starts skateboarding when they move to California, and I probably do eat more avocado than I did originally. But that's not always something of a choice. It's always just like, oh, this whatever tuna sandwich has avocado in it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like seek avocado out. I mean, I guess I drink beer sometimes now. But that's again a very specific San Diego thing, because it's like known for craft brew and
I think that
you literally can't go a block in certain neighborhoods without running into another craft right. brewery.
I kind of feel like that there's a lot of cities in America that are who think their claim to fame is beer. I think Milwaukee might have something on you.
I actually think you might be wrong. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know enough about it to say anything. So
all I know it is a thing of San Diegan pride.
All right. You said you had some beef. Before we get on to the show, this is a movie review podcast, and we will be talking about Wonder Woman, which just recently came out, and we're finally going to review Nerdland, which I assigned us a long-ass time ago. But
a month ago.
Before we get on to that in the movie news, you have beef.
Yeah. So I wanted to call out The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. he's been floating around this idea that he's going to run for president in 2020. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of celebrities have like come forward and, you know, said that after Trump won. It's like, oh, any of us can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's my thing. Rock, this is an open letter to the Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Shut the fuck up. Okay? Shut the fuck up. You're not running for president. And if you are, fuck you. You want to be a president? Stop making 15 movies a year. Stop making ballas and run for a fucking elected position. I don't give a fuck what it is. I don't care if it's a city council. I don't care. But if you run for president based solely on the fact that you're famous, you're an asshole. Just like the asshole who's currently in office. And you're not the people's president, not the people's champion, you're not gonna rock bottom taxes. Fuck you. If you're serious, and I mean this, hold an office, a single office, before you run. Otherwise, you're a dick. If you smell what I'm cooking.
I concur.
I mean, that goes for any celebrity who thinks they can run based solely on celebrity.
Right. I mean,
but The Rock is just like, he did a big thing on SNL about it. He says it in every fucking interview right now.
Yeah, I think he might actually try based upon like, there's been a lot of celebrities floated the idea. I think Oprah has been floated. I don't know if she's herself has said it, but
some of these people get floated by the internet or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like a rumor starts. Like there's a rumor Mark Zuckerberg might be gearing up to run or whatever. But even that would make more sense.
No. But I think there's a good chance Mark Cuban could.
My point is, if you're a celebrity and you're thinking of running for office, you have 4 years to get some fucking experience. Otherwise, you are just as bad as Donald Trump. You might not be as bad of a person. You might not be as bad of a human being as that fetid pile of orange dump. But you are just as ill-equipped for the job. And you are just as much of an asshole. So, get working.
Yeah.
Campaign.
I agree.
City council, mayor, governor, whatever. I don't care. I don't care if it's a member of the PT fucking A. Hold some form of elected position. Or go fuck yourself.
I actually think that, I mean, I'm one of those people who doesn't believe, like, the Constitution should never, ever be touched, and that I'm a constitutional protectionist. I'm not. I think that it's an old-ass document that could use a few updates here or there,
That's the whole point of amendments.
Right. One of which I think there should be an amendment to say that a person should hold office before running, just so that what just happened never happens again.
Yeah.
But okay. Let's
stepping off soapbox. Let's move on to movie news. Did you do a fun little soundbite for us?
Oh well, I mean, I have that one that's that may chill people to the bone.
Yeah, use it.
Okay, All right, here's...
We'll see if we get some feedback.
All right, movie news.
Movie news. Talking about that movie news.
We're going to try and do a lightning round.
Yeah, there's a lot.
There's a lot. We're way backed up. So we'll start off with this one. There's going to be an X-Men spinoff called New Mutants, and they've cast Anya Taylor-Joy from The Witch and Split, and Maisie Williams from Game of Thrones. They're going to play Magic and Wolfsbane. And what do you think?
Hot thoughts. Apparently, the New Mutants lineup will, like, the mutants they've picked actually are New Mutants, so it's not a X-Men First Class situation going on, which is kind of nice. Mm-hmm. Sounds like they're trying to actually get the lineup from the comic books. And if Maisie Williams is playing Wolfsbane, she plays Arya Stark in Game of Thrones, and Sansa Stark, can't remember the actress's name off the top of my head, already played Jean Grey in X-Men Apocalypse, so that's kind of fun.
Right. Yeah, I'm kind of with you on this. If it's a New Mutants kind of thing, if it's truly a spinoff and it kind of gets to be its own thing, I think we could have some fun here. Yeah, let's hope that they try and bring more life and energy into it and not try and clutter it up too much with Singer lore or existing X-Men lore. Just write good stories.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Zac Efron to play Ted Bundy in Extremely Wicked and Shockingly Evil and Vile. It's based on a book by somebody who's not in the first paragraph. But the big story here is Zac Efron is going to be playing Ted Bundy. Thoughts?
My thoughts are, when I saw this article, I thought it said Bill Hader was going to be playing Ted Bundy, and I think it's solely because the thumbnail looked like Bill Hader. Mm-hmm. And so now that's in my head, and so now I don't care. Like, I don't really care about Zac Efron. I don't hate him. I don't love him. It could be fine. But I was genuinely pretty excited when I thought Bill Hader was going to be doing it. So this excites me less.
Yeah, I think the reason they cast Zac Efron specifically is because Ted Bundy's known as, like, the handsome serial killer. Like, he seduced women and then killed them. And
I think it was more of a charming thing than a straight up...
ridiculously, I mean, good looking. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not unattractive, you know, but he... He's like a Billy Crudup level, I would say.
It's more of a rugged handsome rather than like perfectly chiseled Hollywood Barbie doll.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, Zac Efron's fine. We'll see.
However, there is an interesting trend here in that My Friend Dahmer, which comes out later this year, stars an ex-Disney person as Dahmer, teenage Dahmer. And now, so maybe it's going to be the ex-Disney serial killer extended universe.
Let's run with this. Let's play with this. Ryan Gosling is Gacy.
All right.
Give it to Gosling.
So appropriate.
Okay, who could play Ed Gein? Justin Timberlake as Ed Gein.
Your references are so fucking old. I was going to say one of the Jonas Brothers.
I don't know.
Hot takes. Okay, next one. David Ayer is in talks to remake Scarface again for Universal. A lot of people don't know that the Scarface in the 80s with Al Pacino is actually a remake of a Howard Hawks film from the 40s? 30s,
oh,
even?
I didn't know that was the remake. I thought maybe there was a remake in between I didn't know about.
Those are the only two Scarfaces I know of, but...
Yeah, I don't really care. My experience with David Ayer is Suicide Squad, which was garbage. Mm-hmm. But I think, from everything I've heard, I think he'll probably do better with a crime... you know, thriller, like he did End of Watch, right? Mm-hmm. People liked that. Yeah, whatever. I'm not one of those dudes who wears, you know, Scarface shirts and chinos. Like, I have no reverence for Scarface. I actually have never even really seen it all the way through.
Oh.
So, whatever.
I like Scarface enough. I like both Scarfaces. The one, the original gangster film, is good. And I think the De Palma film is batshit crazy. And, you know, it's, I think, kind of fun for what it is. It's not all the way a good movie, but it's kind of an entertaining one. You have, that's the beginning of Pacino really overacting his ass off. Mm-hmm. David Ayer, I do have some amount of respect for as a filmmaker. I have mixed to positive feelings about End of Watch, but I have, again, mixed to positive feelings about Fury, which was his World War II kind of Guns of the Navarone thing. And of course,
I heard good things about it.
Right. Suicide Squad was a mess, but it wasn't entirely his fault. Next story.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy set to star as Venom in Ruben Fleischer's Venom movie for Sony.
Sony, stop. We already gave Spider-Man to Marvel. Just don't do other things. Don't do superhero, like, work out the same deal. I don't, also, does Venom need a standalone movie? I don't care. I mean, I like Tom Hardy, all right. I like Tom Hardy. He's, but, you know, we're going to get a weird mumbling Venom who, I'm Venom. But, like, is he part of the Marvel Universe? Is it its own thing? Will he, because you can't really have Venom without Spider-Man. Like, they're too closely tied. So the logistics alone give me a headache, and I just don't care.
Mm-hmm. I care a little bit more, only because the only other Venom depiction we've seen in screen is the Topher Grace one that was kind of shoved in the middle of a overcrowded Spider-Man 3. And it,
don't care. I Venom's fine. He's an okay character, but there are so many Spider-Man villains. There are so many anti-heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care.
Well, I do agree with you in the sense that I don't want to see the anti-hero Venom. That's my least favorite Venom. The Venom I do want to see goes toe-to-toe with Spider-Man. And yes, I agree. Logistics, you know, which company owns what, can they cross over? That gives me anxiety.
Yeah, it just, like, stresses me out. I'm like, but... Okay, I know we were doing hot takes. Mm-hmm. I do have to stop you right for a minute. There was a really good run of Venom where Flash Thompson got the symbiote, and he was it was like a government agency was trying to control the symbiote, kind of like they're always trying to do with the Xenomorphs and Alien.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like, force bond it to Flash Thompson, who got crippled in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the suit gives him his legs back and gives him a chance to be Spider-Man, who he always revered. It's actually a pretty fun run. So, like, something like that, I think, could be interesting. But they're not gonna do that. That's, like, 30 years into character backstory that requires a lot of depth. So,
right,
yeah,
right.
Don't care.
Yeah, yeah. I'll give it a tentative. We'll see. Okay, this one's kind of crazy. Zack Snyder steps down in the middle of production from Justice League. He hands it off to Joss Whedon to finish or to take to the finish line because his daughter just committed suicide.
Well, from the article, I guess his daughter committed suicide earlier this year, and from the sound of it, him and his wife were trying to, you know, continue living their lives. And he was still, because they announced this, like, at the end of May, and she killed herself in like, March.
Oh.
So it seems like they were trying to get through it, but...
They caught up with him.
Yeah, which, I mean, is really sad. Like,
yeah.
I don't really care much for Zack Snyder as a director, but I mean, that's, no one should have to go through that.
Yeah.
That is the worst. I think I think he's making the right decision for himself and his wife, because she also is working on the universe too, right?
Yeah, she's a co-producer of all those movies. Yeah.
So regardless of what you think of him as a director, I think he's making the right choice for himself, which I think is way more important. And, you know, we've talked about it. I'm not a huge fan of his. Anyway.
Oh, I'm sure it'll come up in our Wonder Woman review. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Joss Whedon is coming into it so late. Like, I literally think he's just sort of making sure it gets done. Like, I don't think he's going to have a lot of influence in the way the movie comes out. Mm-hmm. I still think it's going to be a Zack Snyder thing. Mm-hmm. So I know some people are like, oh, maybe Joss Whedon can kind of save it. I wouldn't count on too much of his influence. I just think it's really sad, no matter what. And I feel bad. I wish that if he was going to walk away from the DC universe, it wouldn't be under these circumstances, because that's just really sad.
Agreed. Ditto on all of that. Yeah, a lot of people have been making a lot about the Joss Whedon factor. It's like, ooh, you know, and they're really gearing up for another Avengers. Yeah, I don't think that's what we're going to get. I think he's just there to do sort of the sausage making of the final parts of production.
Yeah, I mean, I heard they did some reshoots. I think it will be minimal at best. I think he might be in the editing room, which I think is actually one of the things that, like, Batman v Superman needed most was some better editing. So, you know, maybe we'll see it in post. You know, maybe we'll get a little bit more cohesion, a little less style, but I really wouldn't count on it.
Agreed. And overall, I don't think it's good news for anybody. I mean, a movie this size having this big of a shift is pretty seismic, and I think even if you're handing it off to somebody that people like, it's going to hurt the infrastructure of the movie itself. So we'll see. Okay. Adam Wingard tapped to direct Godzilla vs. King Kong. Adam Wingard, the director who brought us You're Next and The Guest. This is another, like, a lot of, I mean, if we look at this series so far, I forgot who did King Kong, but, or Kong Skull Island, but, you know, bringing in Gareth Edwards for Godzilla, and then Colin Trevorrow, who recently did Jurassic World. There's this trend in Hollywood of, like, let's get these indie directors who people kind of like, and then give them just shit ton of money to do a huge project.
You know, and I say what you will about Godzilla or Kong, though, I think they both, I liked them more than I didn't like them, but I also do kind of agree. It's kind of the same thing with, you know, bringing Mark Webb to do those Spider-Man movies. Mm-hmm. Like maybe let's let these directors sort of figure out their directing style. Like, you know, it feels like they're not casting them for their voice. Like, they're just not. Mm-hmm. They're casting them because they've been able to make movies. Like, to me, that's what it feels like. It literally could not matter what those movies were. Like, I doubt the studio execs who make these decisions have probably even seen whatever movies they've done. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, they heard, oh, this was kind of successful. Yeah, let's bring him up. Let's graduate him. It just feels weird. I don't know, but I, you know, I also, I liked You're Next. Yeah, I don't know, it's because that's gonna be a big movie. Godzilla versus Kong is
a big effects movie, and so far all three of the movies I know that he's done were not effects movies. I mean, there's some amount of logistics that go into making a slasher horror film or whatever. But, you know, we're talking about, like, CGI something versus CGI something else.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think with Godzilla, Gareth Edwards, with his background of at least his were monster movies. But I think he also, with Godzilla, showed a lot of restraint with the monster, much, a lot of people would say, to the detriment of that movie. I think a lot of people could have used a little more Godzilla, or, you know, maybe just at least more interesting human characters, whatever. But you know what? Your next, I will say, though, one of the things I actually really liked about that movie was all the characters were very interesting. And I think there is potential with this idea of bringing up these, you know, indie smaller directors, because they do have to work with less, you know, and giving them that opportunity. The problem is, I think they just, in the past, it feels like they don't know how to deal with the studio to get the movie they want made. And so I'm afraid it's, you know, gonna be that. Like, they're just basically hiring a DP, and calling him a director, but really it's a producer's movie.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, I think that I've always said the studios like to do this. These graduating, these young directors or these indie directors, because they're cheap. They're going to be cheaper than getting somebody who has a history in making large budget films. And they're also going to be a little naive. And I think that they're a lot more hungry to please a studio than somebody who's been around the block a few times. So yeah. I think the studios who hire them hope that they can use their name recognition for the fans and for the blogs, but they can also sort of have directors
control them,
who are a little bit more subservient. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. That being said, I like what I've seen from Adam Wingard in the past. Mm-hmm. So far, I've been more optimistic with the monster universe, the kaiju verse. Have to be specific, because now,
right.
I think they might be the only other ones that have kind of been able to pull off a shared universe thing. Mm-hmm. When everything's said and done, I feel like they've gotten closer than most. So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited for Godzilla versus Kong. Like, at the end of the day, if I just see a giant monkey punch a giant lizard in the face, I'm gonna be happy. So just, like, don't fuck that up.
Right, right. Well, speaking of The Rock, there's still the Rampage movie coming out.
Oh, yeah, because he's gonna have time, you know, campaigning for fucking president. Fuck you, Rock.
All right, well, you officially are unable to do lightning rounds right now, so that'll be our last story.
Yeah. What? We got through it.
I said we have a few stories left, but we can save them for next week. All right. Do you want me to set this up, or you can? Doesn't matter. I'll do it.
Okay.
Okay, so this is the Wonder Woman movie, the long-awaited Wonder Woman movie. At one point, Joss Whedon was talking about directing this or writing it, and he got kicked off the project. So they handed it to...
Okay. you're already going into it. Like,
oh, that's I'm just setting the stage here. Here we go. Patty Jenkins got put on the project. Patty Jenkins at one point was supposed to direct Thor 2, The Dark World. And then she had some issues with Marvel Studios.
This is why I hate movie news.
But this I feel like this all informs very interestingly, given that there's some, you know, there's this West Side versus East Side, you know, rivalry between Marvel Universe and DC Universe right now.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It's you know, right. we get to see how this battle plays out in real time with these movies. Patty Jenkins now directing Wonder Woman, so female director on a first big budget female-driven superhero film. We've seen Gal Gadot, the star, play Wonder Woman in the previous Batman versus Superman, but that movie was kind of a mess, and her role in it was kind of loosely drawn as it was. It was kind of hard to tell. You know, some people were pretty positive about her in the movie. I didn't really have much of a take either way. She was just more stuff that was in the movie, full of stuff.
Yeah, like, she did about as much for me in that movie as
Doomsday.
What's his name's portrayal? Who played Zod?
Oh yeah, sure. Michael Sheen. Michael Sheen.
What is his?
Michael Shannon.
Hey, Mike. What was his name? Mark IMDb. It's Michael Shannon, guys. Her performance did about it. God damn it, that joke is fucked. Okay, let's just move on to this movie.
I'll move on to the synopsis. So this is an origin story, and you know, I'll say off the top, Wonder Woman's not a character I know that much about. I never really read her comics, like just straight Wonder Woman comics. She showed up in other stuff, DC stuff that I've read. But I knew she's like from Amazon. She's kind of like this like ancient, you know, Greek thing.
Oh my God. She's not from Amazon. She's not from an online shipping warehouse. She is an Amazon.
She's an Amazonian warrior people. Princess. Yes. From a magical island called something with a lot of syllables.
Themyscira.
Mm-hmm. And
Themyscira? I don't know.
You know, largely I was never that interested in her as a character. I know she's one of the pillars of the Justice League. But basically I always
spoken like the patriarchy.
I know. But basically I was always like, I guess with Wonder Woman. But you know, regardless of what I feel, the world is very excited about this movie. This is an origin story. It talks about her sort of training as a princess. And her mother and her, like, you know, trainer lady, played by Robin Wright, are trying to sort of protect her a little bit from a little bit more knowledge about where she comes from. But at the same time, also trying to prepare her for the ultimate war, ultimate showdown she's supposed to have with Ares, the god of war, who is thought to have been destroyed but is still out there in the ether somewhere. Until one day... Chris Pine from World War I flies into their island and almost drowns. She saves him, and he tells her of the real war that's going on in our world, and her sense of justice and truth and altruism inspires her to join Chris Pine
she thinks... She hears about this war. She's from an island of peace. Mm-hmm. And she hears about this war raging over the world, and she thinks, oh, this is Ares doing. This is...
Right.
He has returned.
And this is it.
It's our duty to defeat him as Amazonians. So she... It's not just like she's like, oh, I'm going to go help people. It's... I mean, it specifically ties into her... Like, the legend she was told as she was raised. She was like, oh, he's... This is a sign... of the end times. This is my foe is returned. Let's fuck some shit up.
Yeah, so Chris Pine sort of stewards her into our world, or around the turn of the century.
He mansplains our world to her. Let's get that straight.
All right. You know, there's a little bit of the kind of Thor, the first Thor sort of fish out of water stuff. There's a little bit of the Captain America sort of pulp, rocketeerish kind of stuff. And there's a little bit of like Xena Warrior Princess kind of stuff going on at the beginning. And I'm going to say, maybe to your surprise, I thought all those different elements fit together pretty well. I thought this is a very solid movie. The best movie that the DCU has released so far. Not a perfect film. A little cliche in a lot of different places, but it holds together, and that's more than I can say for their output since Man of Steel.
Yeah, okay, so I want to speak to this movie on two different fronts.
Okay.
I want to speak to it as a movie, and I want to speak to it as the cultural...
Firestorm.
...phenomena that is Wonder Woman. So as a movie itself. As a superhero picture, it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this, you summed it up very well. It feels like Thor meets Captain America. Like, to me, this feels sort of like Phase 1 Marvel, which is not a bad thing. I love Phase 1 Marvel. It's a lot of fun. There's it's colorful. It's... Here's the thing. It's a good superhero story. You know, you get the superhero stuff. You get the juice. Mm-hmm. You get the superhero juice that Superman or the Man of Steel was so desperately needing, and that Batman v Superman was not didn't even have. So you get that. It's a competent superhero story.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the best superhero movie of all time. It's not.
No.
I'm sorry. I think when it came out, you know, it was like before opening weekend, it was sitting at 99% Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. There was like, this is the best reviewed superhero movie ever. And it's like,
I'm not even sure that's true, but
it is not. Right now it's at a 93%, so it has dipped. I believe The Dark Knight is higher, and The Avengers is a 1 percentage point lower. It's up there,
right?
It's ranked up there, but I just remember early reviews were like, this is the best mark. But that being said, there is a cultural context here.
Yeah.
This is important that it is a female superhero. And it is important that people are so excited about that. And I don't want to shit on anybody's parade. You know, because it's like people have been saying, you know, this movie's been waiting around for 75 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's how long the character's been around. To me, that's kind of like... To me, this is the first Spider-Man movie, but for women.
Yeah?
Like, women are getting as excited about this as I got when the first Spider-Man movie came around. So, to me, it's like, that's the gap. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, that's sort of, to me, when the modern superhero movie started. But that is way too long of a gap. You know, like, women... what heroes have they had in movies? We've had Elektra, great. we've had Catwoman. Like, you know, there is an audience for it, this, and they are hungry for it. And I'm just so glad that it was good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the best superhero movie of all time, but it is. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun. It was a fun adventure. Honestly, my biggest problem with it was two things. I know they have to tie it to the DC universe.
Sure.
I know they do. And they didn't, it wasn't blatant. It's just sort of like a bookend. But all it did was remind me of how, like, it just reminded me of Batman v Superman. And it's like, had Batman v Superman not existed, had this been the follow-up to Superman,
mm-hmm.
then fuck yeah, we're talking. But it's like, I can't get that out of my head. So immediately starting off with that bookend, I'm like, ugh. Like, trigger warning.
Oh, the like the Wayne Industries like thing or whatever.
Yeah, which I mean, as far as like connections go, was pretty minute. Like, basically, yeah. This movie exists in a vacuum, and I'm glad.
Yeah, I feel it's very much its own. Like, I don't think you'd have to have seen any of the previous movies to understand it. Or
no, and I don't think you should. I think. You know, all you see is like a van that says Wayne Industries, and she like sends him an email saying thanks or whatever. But
right. But
to me, it's just a bummer that so far, you know, that's what it's connected to. It's like, you know, it's connected to Suicide Squad. It's connected to Batman v Superman, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's frustrating. It's like, I wish this had been one of the movies that they'd used to, you know, maybe build their universe instead right. of, but whatever. That, and I do think the ending is a little clunky.
Destruction heavy?
Not even destruction heavy, because I like that we actually get to see a female superhero in a Duke amount.
Mm.
It does play like a boss battle in a video game, and I think the ending could have been restructured to work better, because there was stuff I liked in there. It's just that it starts to move really fast, and I think some of the great stuff that was done in the movie gets a little lost. Like, one of the things I really liked about the movie is the supporting cast. It's Wonder Woman's show, but she's got some really fun, like, sidekicks that she hangs out with that I actually think were better than, were better portrayed than, like, Steve Rogers and Captain America and the Howling Commandos. Like, we didn't really get much of the Howling Commandos. You know, there was the Easter egg that they existed, but we didn't really get them as characters because it was Cap's movie.
Right.
Whereas in this movie, it's still definitely Wonder Woman's movie, but they had some really fun side characters and were really well thought out and just used, I thought, very effectively.
Agreed.
And I read like a little article about the Native American character and how there's like this tiny Easter egg where because she in the movie she can speak a whole bunch of languages, like every language, I guess. She's sort of like a Rosetta Stone is one of her powers. And she greets him in traditional, I believe it's Blackfoot tribe, their language. And it was something that only like Native Americans who know that language picked up. And I just like that's a little detail that's very cool. That, you know, they didn't have to point it out. You know, me and my wife just talked about this. And I guess he got to pick his own costume.
That's cool. It's cool that they bothered to actually put some amount of research into it.
Yeah, and just that, you know, it's this movie is about inclusion, not just for women, you know, but, you know, we have a Native American, we have a my racism is for the Middle East is going to come out again. the guy who wears the fez, I don't know, they don't say. They don't
Samir say his name in the movie, Saeed Taghmali is the actor.
Yeah, so we got representation there.
And Ewan Bremmer from Train Spotting as Charlie.
Who's a lot of fun.
He's really fun,
And all these characters have pretty small amounts of screen time, but that you get to know them very well. They're used very effectively. I mean, one of the things I liked about this movie was this. It's a big, fun superhero movie that isn't afraid to have quiet moments.
Yeah, you know, that's what I've been telling people, like, who run into me at work or whatever, and they, what did you think? And I said, you know, it's the first DC movie we've seen in a while that has scenes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, there's kind of a cliche out there that Zack Snyder just likes to direct these kind of, he likes to direct moments. He doesn't direct scenes. He likes to, he likes to set up shots and these, like these glory moments or these, you know, these things that you can frame and put in a trailer. But he has a hard time actually directing actors to talk to each other and build a scene up and actually like get, a real emotional connection to the characters. And this movie has that. And I think that's, so far, the biggest distinction you can see from the DC movies we've seen so far, and out of the DC universe, I should say, not including like Nolan's Batman movies or whatever. Movie, which you know, they do take a lot of time with those characters. There's a lot of building up to even the Wonder Woman stuff. They play a good amount of detail. Our attention to her backstory and her origin,
but it's never boring either.
No.
Like when they show her as a little girl, I was kind of, like, part of me was, there was this part, like, cynical part of my brain that I had to shut off while watching this movie, because part of me is like, oh great, like, how, you know, how long are we gonna have to deal with her as a little girl? But then I thought about it, and then I thought about how fucking important it was to see her as a little girl. Like, sort of the whole mission statement for this character is women can have heroes too. And so I actually was like, at the tail end of the movie, I was like, actually, yeah, it's really important that we got to see this character started as a little girl. Like, you know what I mean?
Sure.
It actually, I think, meant a lot to the character. Also, you know, it speaks to how she's naive to the world outside of Themyscira. Mm-hmm. I remember at the start of the movie, there were things that would happen that I thought I would have issues with, but Patty Jenkins totally wins me over on them. Like, even the Zack Snyder sort of, like, swooshy, like, slow-mo bullet time stuff, mm-hmm. I thought she used it. She does a similar thing, but I thought she used it with restraint. And very effectively, like that scene on the beach is so fucking cool.
Scene on the beach is cool. I think the centerpiece of the movie, action wise, is the scene in the trenches. Yes.
I was building to that, because part of me wished the rest of the movie had been, the No Man's Land sequence.
Yeah.
Is so fucking good.
It's exactly what the movie should be.
Yes. Like, she has one of the best action set pieces in a superhero movie to date.
Well, yeah, that one's very good. That might be a little strong. But, and I'll say that, for me, the slow-mo speed up, slow down ramping stuff is a little bit of a ding. I wish there had been less of it. And I think that a lot of the action sequences, especially the big ones, like the final sequence, which is, again, another ding for me, I think there's a little bit of editing, hiding what the characters are doing. Like, there's a little bit of kind of like a chop socky editing where it's like you see a fist and it cuts and then you see a leg and then it cuts. And I would have liked the frame to be a little wider on some of these fight sequences and let them kind of move a little bit more naturally. But
at the end, I totally agree with you. But those two sequences
are good.
The beach scene and the No Man's Land scene, like, yeah, to me, are, like, phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why the ending, the climax, was a little bit of a letdown, because it was so cliche.
It feels bolted on, and it feels like a studio note, because mm-hmm. what really bothers me about that ending sequence where she, you know, goes toe-to-toe with Ares, which we know is going to happen in the movie, is it disconnects her from the emotional action scene. There's two action scenes happening at the same time. There's the one with Chris Pine, who's trying to deal with this war situation.
Yes.
Which is the emotional arc that we've been following throughout the whole movie. Then we disconnect her from that action sequence so she can have a video game boss battle somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, and there's some choppy, I do think there was some choppy editing there.
The cross-cutting, like, between the two. That's why I feel like that whole boss battle at the end is a studio note. Because it doesn't feel like the movie was going there. Like, there's a point in which there's a reveal involving Ares. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that reveal was a better resolve to that whole thing than what ended up happening after.
I agree, but I
mean, they could have dealt with it in other ways as well. Like, I just...
Yes.
That, you know, watching these two overpowered Dragon Ball Z-ish characters shooting lightning at each other is not as interesting to me as watching her, you know, help her friends who we've watched her, you know, deal with throughout the whole movie, and dealing with war as a concept rather than war as a embodied physical god.
Exactly. I agree completely. And that's where the movie... It didn't lose me.
It just became a little bit more sort of like by the numbers at that point.
Exactly. And that's where I think saying this is, you know, the best superhero movie ever is a little unfair, because it does follow a lot of pretty broad superhero strokes, but it does them well.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, making a wheel just as well as the last wheel that was made.
I think it's easy to feel like, yes, this is, you know, but there is enough going on with the characters, and the again the gender politics of it speaks volumes. Like,
right. A lot of that, I think, is more context than content, though. And so I don't want to go over the moon with the how feminist this movie is, because I think removed from this moment in time, which as film critics, I have to think about.
Yeah.
I have to think about this moment in time. And of course, I addressed it in my written review.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to assume that there is a lot both in the screenplay and in the intentions of the filmmakers to push that narrative. I think that that narrative comes forth anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. And that's kind of what I'm saying, actually, is that as a movie, I don't think it reinvents the wheel, but I do think it is about time that other demographics than my own get their heroes. And that's what's important about it, is they don't treat this movie special because she's a woman, but they just treat it like we want to make the best Wonder Woman movie we can. And to me, that's
right.
Where it's different. That's where it's different than the Elektras and the Catwomen. And
sure. And I think the success of Wonder Woman, you know, if there is a creative rivalry between the DCU and the Marvel universe, it would be nice to see Marvel step up their game on that front and be able to. I know we have that Brie Larson thing coming out, the Marvel, Captain Marvel.
Yeah,
so it'd be great if they you know.
Competition is always a good thing when it comes to industry like this. And you know what? I do think it is fitting that the first big female superhero movie is Wonder Woman. Like, there is there is something nice and poetic about that. And I really hope the DC universe follows this. I hope they learn why. I hope they know why this is a good movie and not. And that's the cynical part of me, is like, are they going to just bank on the fact that, oh, the women heroes can sell now, it's 2017, or are they going to realize, no, it's also a good movie. Like, there's characters, there's scenes. I care about what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I remember that feeling when I saw Spider-Man the first time. Like, I'm dead inside now. but it excites me that the world can still get excited about a hero like this, and a hero with an overall like optimistic message.
Yeah, and I think, you know, speaking of context and stuff, I think I definitely felt that. I feel like, you know, depending on where you are in the political spectrum, it feels kind of like a hopeless time right now. And there's been so much defeat in the face of what I feel is true justice, that it's nice to see a character on screen who says, fuck all y'all, I know what needs to be done.
Yeah, and you know, exactly. Like, Batman can be complicated and nuanced and dark and gritty and brooding and whatever and stuff.
Yeah.
But Superman doesn't need to be. And thank God Wonder Woman didn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm so glad we didn't get the Dark Knight treatment for Wonder Woman. Like,
agreed.
Like we did with Man of Steel. You know, a lot of people came out of that movie just feeling like it was bleak. And that's not Superman's character. And that's not Wonder Woman's character anymore either. And, you know, again, I don't really follow her in the comics that much either, but this made me want to.
Yeah, that was my bar. I said, going into the movie, the only expectation I tried to bring to it, even with all the, you know, the context and all of the DCU flubs of blah, 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 my only bar was, can you make me walk away from this movie caring more about the character than I am walking into the movie? Because I don't really care about Wonder Woman, basically. If I come out of the movie being like, oh, I kind of get and care about Wonder Woman, then the movie will have done its job. And it did.
Yeah.
I guess the other only negative thing I would say about it is, I didn't think that there needed to be a love story. They kind of shove one in there, but whatever. What are you going to do?
I didn't hate it. Because her character wasn't devoted to him. It wasn't it didn't feel like it didn't fit in the movie. Like, it felt pretty earned to me. Like, their chemistry felt pretty real. Because the issue of sex doesn't really come up with superheroes very often. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that, they allude to the fact that she sleeps with Steve and that it doesn't have to be like this big thing. Patty Jenkins, one of her sort of big messages was this is a character who fights for love. And so I do think to have a character who fights for love, I do think there's an argument that, how do you have a character that fights for love if she can't love? So it didn't bother me. Like, to me, it didn't steal focus from what the movie was about. It only informed the character. So to me, that's not a bad call.
I kind of put this in the same ballpark as the Ares thing. It's like, I would have rather her fight for love as a concept than fight for love in the physical embodiment of Chris Pine, who, I mean, he's very charming. I could easily see why anybody would fall in love with Chris Pine.
Yeah, I think that if you have a personal connection to it, it just makes more sense. To me, that doesn't bother me as much as the war thing. Like, I totally agree with you there. I think, for her to have to deal with her naivety and face some, like, harsh truths could have been a very growing moment for her instead of her just being like, oh, yep, Ares is here, or whatever. Right. Whereas her character falling in love, it felt like a pretty natural arc. And again, it wasn't ever like a subservient love. Like, they genuinely felt like, she definitely wasn't like subservient to him or anything like that. So I liked it. I to me, it informed the overall story. So
I could have done without it, but we'll leave it at that.
Well, yeah, but you're a cynical asshole.
Okay, let's get on to Nerdland.
Oh, speaking of cynical assholes, what was your letter grade?
I gave it a B+.
Okay, I'd give it an A-.
All right, yeah. Nerdland. This is the Netflix homework, which I assigned you.
Yeah.
Set this up.
Okay, so Nerdland is the story of a couple slacker, like 20-somethings who haven't really done anything with their lives. One of them wants to be... They live in Hollywood, which is very important. One of them is an aspiring actor, and the other is an aspiring writer. But they're both just kind of losers. They go to the mall to sort of, like, pseudo-stalk these girls they have crushes on, and who don't give a fuck about them. And, they just think if we could just get famous, all we need is our big break. And our lives would be what we'd want them to be. And so the rest of the movie is just sort of them in a pursuit of fame.
Right. Hatching up crazier and weirder ways of getting famous.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just saw this recently, and the movie's still kind of rattling around in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if I have a consensus as to how I felt about it yet. I know it's not good. Okay. I can say that fairly confidently, that if it is a comedy, it's not a very funny one. And that's a huge failing for the movie. I don't know if we mentioned this. This is an animated film. This was produced by
Titmouse.
Titmouse Animation, among other companies that kind of worked together on it. And it has kind of a crude sort of Adult Swim-ish sort of look to it.
Mm-hmm. I actually liked the animation a lot.
Yeah.
It's like, if you just sort of look at pictures, it looks pretty not good. Mm-hmm. Like, it's pretty harsh and kind of grotesque. But the animation's really smooth, and and I actually think worked pretty, like, I liked the animation style. I
thought it looked fine, yeah, especially given the tone of the movie.
Yeah, so it's sort of like a Hunter S. Thompson animated
kind of thing, yeah.
Vibe going on. Like,
right.
Whatever that is, picture that, and that's what it is.
Right. But despite the fact that I didn't think that it was very funny, and I was kind of, and I could see that the movie was sort of meandering, and it kind of went nowhere, it did give me, like, a nostalgia for, like, 90s slacker movies, because if you'd just taken the screenplay, this totally would have been a movie made in 1996 starring Pauly Shore.
Yes, I actually, that was one of the things I thought was, I was like, this felt like the movie we were trying to write, like, back in high school, when that was basically all we watched.
Right.
Yeah, so, to me, it was, like, hit a little too, like, I feel like I would have loved this movie, you know, 15 years ago.
You're right, exactly.
But
I don't know about love, but I might have been able to appreciate its cult sensibility more than I do now.
Yeah, I didn't think it was entirely unfunny. I do think there were a lot of gags that didn't land. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of crude humor that, I don't know, some of it felt kind of forced. Like, there's a scene at the very beginning where he gets caught about to have sex with a blow-up doll, and it's pretty right. gross, and just feels really like, okay. Okay, I get that. You know what I mean? That was a lot of the humor for me. But there was one sequence in the middle that I was like, are they going to go there?
And I think I know which one you're talking about. The one with the old lady neighbor.
Yeah, like that mm-hmm. whole... Like, once they get the video... Like, that... okay, so they're trying to get famous. Mm-hmm. And they keep coming up with dumber and dumber ways. Like what, and that was what bothered me, was the ways they were trying to come up to be famous, I felt like could have been a lot more clever and funny. Like, mm-hmm. one of them is like, I'm going to dress like a hippie and fight the cops. And I was like, okay. Like, that just felt, that felt like, so there's this philosophy in improv of, like, third thought. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to get... Like, you get the suggestion, and it's whatever. Give me a word. Just any word.
Beach ball.
Beach ball, right? So, beach ball, that makes most people think of the beach, the ocean, right? That's mm-hmm. the first thought. Then, you know, you want to get away from that first thought. So, it's like, beach, ocean, beached whale... I don't, this isn't a great example.
Hot dog stand or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Or like Pinocchio. Pinocchio's sure. inside the beach whale, right? Whereas, like, I'm going to be dressed like a hippie and fight the cops is very much like, I don't know. It just felt very like that was a placeholder idea that never got punched up, that never got improved, you know?
Right.
It was like, okay, we'll have them get famous one way. I don't know, maybe he'll dress like a hippie and try to fight the cops or whatever. You know, and they were like, yeah, we can change that later. And then just, like, through the writing process, they're like, oh, we never changed that, whatever. Anyway, that was a long, rambling description of what I felt like a lot of this movie was.
Right.
But this sequence, they decide that they're to get really famous, to get really infamous, they're going to murder somebody. Mm-hmm. And that sequence where Paul Rudd's character was like immediately okay with it, like he mm-hmm. came up with the idea, and then Patton Oswalt's character was really not cool with it, and he was like, I just can't do it, and they... There was, like, this sad moment where they decide to stop being friends because one of them's going to become a murderer and the other one's not. That, to me, was a really funny sequence. And then they went and got this, like, hidden tape from the Nerd King.
Oh, yeah, the... Place. Of every violent sequence ever assembled in a R-rated or NC-17 movie.
Yeah, I thought that was a really funny bit. And then they decide mm-hmm. to try and... they're going to actually try to kill... their old lady neighbor, and like that whole stretch, I was like the only time I was really into the movie, Because I thought it was pretty clever, and I genuinely didn't know if they were going to kill that lady.
Yeah, they hold the tension really well there for that whole bit in the middle. Unfortunately, the movie doesn't really have much of a structure. It, again, kind of harkens back to those 90s slacker films in that they kind of it's more about the what happens in the course of a day than necessarily a three-act plot.
Yeah.
But that little bit in the middle there where they are kind of going to go through with this, it holds the tension really well. Are they going to go over the line? Are they going to go past a point of with these characters? And the way it holds the tension keeps it a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, and because it's a very dark comedy, and I'm like, oh, how dark is this going to get? Is it going to go, like, full Natural Born Killers? Like, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. So that chunk of the movie, I actually enjoyed quite a bit. But the rest of it, I kind of didn't care about.
It kind of falls, once they sort of blow their load on that conclusion, and then it sort of peters out. But
yeah, like, I feel like that should have been maybe the climax of the movie. I don't know. Yeah, but then, like, the whole thing with the girl characters, I didn't care about.
Yeah, the movie doesn't care about it.
No, there's, again, a kind of robber guy was kind of alright. I don't know. It's an interesting oddity. Like, if you're into that kind of, that 90s slacker style, you'd probably enjoy this. I didn't think it was awful. I wanted it to be more. Like, again, it felt like it shouldn't have been a full-length feature. Like, it felt like it was that sequence we were talking about could have been like a standalone little short on Adult Swim.
Yeah, I think as a feature, it kind of drags. And, I mean, ultimately, I don't think it's that funny, but I'm not even sure if it wants to be all the time. Like, I feel like it is kind of trying to tap into a different tone. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the movie, I was kind of in its rhythm. And I kind of started to feel what the movie wanted to be. And I understood a little bit more about how I should have approached it from the beginning. I still don't think it really... If the appeal of the movie is to be sort of lackadaisical and sort of cynical and just kind of Generation X-y whatever, that's fine. But as that, it's not ambitious enough or original enough to really hold itself apart other than being animated. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I don't think it has a wide enough appeal to really recommend this to very many people at all. I could see it having kind of a cult appeal down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't say that that's, like, totally undeserved. I mean, I will say also, like, like you said, how you sort of found the rhythm of it by the end, there is something kind of, like, hypnotic, and I don't know if that is just sort of enjoyable to watch. I don't know if it's, like, the fact that it's animated, this felt like something that would have been on MTV, like, late at night.
Sure, totally.
Like that weird animated sequence in Tank Girl.
Yeah.
It's like that, but with celebrity voices and... Yeah. Right,
or like Clone High or Undergrads, like those cartoons, if anybody remembers those.
Oh, Clone High is a deep cut. That was a weird show.
Hey, that was a Lord and Miller's first run.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe that bears a little more... exploration.
Here's one complaint, though. Why is this called Nerdland?
Yeah, they're not really nerds. I mean,
yeah,
they're more.
There's one nerd character in it, and he's voiced by Hannibal Buress, and he's barely in the movie.
Yeah. Who I did enjoy that character. I thought that was pretty fun.
I did too. Yeah, and it was good, like, off kilter casting.
Yeah. I'm always up for Hannibal Buress. Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I guess it should have been called, like, Loserland or something. I don't know. Yeah,
or Hollyweird or something like that. Just, I mean, it has nothing really to do with that. This is also very, very specific to the gripes of being poor in Hollywood, which I get, but I don't know if that's going to go from coast to coast.
Well, I mean, you know, Hollywood loves industry movies, and this is,
right.
I think, kind of poking fun at that a little bit. Yeah. But yeah, it didn't. That to me was like just the setting. I don't know.
Sure.
Like, yeah. I got it, but I didn't. You know,
it wasn't so inside baseball that you couldn't see it.
Yeah, traveling. Exactly. Like, I feel like someone who's never been to Hollywood could have come to the same conclusions, you know?
Okay, so what do you have for me next week?
So, Netflix homework for next week is Glengarry Glen Ross. I know we didn't review Boss Baby, but cookies are for closers.
Right. Another one of those list of shame, get to cross off the list, so...
Yeah, Alec Baldwin has been relevant lately. I don't know. It's one of those movies. I like Mamet, so I've always wanted to watch it.
Okay, and that's the show. If anybody wants to email the show, you can at jabberingthedrone@gmail.com. You can find our regular archives at jabberingthedrone.podbean.com, which is where our RSS feed is. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Pocket Cast, the Windows Podcast Network, Google Play, and Player.fm. And you can read my reviews that I do weekly for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. I'll have my Wonder Woman review up pretty soon. You can follow me at BC Cassidy on Twitter, and you can follow the show at Jabber Podcast. So what about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Keith Foster Kid. Come to Tonight in San Diego if you're in the San Diego area. We're back taping every Monday at 8 o'clock. You should check it out. We had a taping last night, and we did one of my favorite segments of all time. So look for that to come out online. Check out tonightinsandiego.com. Follow us on Facebook. We're trying to stream the episodes on Facebook Live. Which is pretty cool, on Thursday nights at I think 8, so look out for that. But yeah, so come to that. For June, or are we in June? June,
yeah. We're in June.
I'm doing a few improv shows at Old Town Actors Studio for the next 3 Thursdays, so that's June 8th at Old Town Actors Studio. Show starts at 7:30. June 15th at Old Town Actors Studio. And June 22nd. The show I'm part of is called Slack to the Future. It is a form that is loosely based around the Richard Linklater movie Slacker. Kind of ties into our Netflix homework today. Except our show is different. I mean, it's not really like the movie Slacker. It's just, we sort of steal the structure for an improv form. Anyway, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So come check those shows out as well. And I think that's it.
All right, cool. Okay. Is there anything you have left to say then?
You know, I think instead, I think it was one of the Conrads ruined Give It to Gosling for me. So I think I'm going to change our call out. Yeah. So now it's going to be cookies are for closers.
Great. I'm so happy about that. All right. Bye.
Bye.